Hey everybody, time for another movie retrospective. Trip down memory lane for this one. It's been a while since we've like done, because we did another Roman Polanski movie. We did The Tenant, which was probably like a lesser known one than this. But I had been wanting to do his classic Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah,
for a very long time.
Polanski was real good for, you know, when he was around.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a good flick.
Yeah, I mean, easily, I'm going to say, and I don't really think too many people are going to argue with me about this, but I mean, easily one of the top 10 or 20 horror movies ever, really.
Yeah, it's a movie of its time, and it's kind of a slow burn movie. It's a psychological thriller, so you got to know that going into this, you know what I mean? It's not like you're dealing with the Evil Dead or Reanimator, you know what I mean? This isn't like a drinking movie. This is one that, you know, you got to sit and watch and pay attention to it. And although I liked it, you know, I think it's a little bit more effective on a female audience because it deals with a bunch of issues that fucking freak the fuck out of women more than it does men.
Yeah, this movie scares the shit out of me.
Yeah. It's a good flip. About Satanists.
Yeah, well, the thing that's cool about this that I think makes it scarier, I mean, at least for me personally, and, you know, Roman Polanski did this on purpose. They actually even bought the rights to the screenplay, or for the novel by Ira Levin, which actually I almost read in its entirety again, like before we did this review. I just didn't have time to finish it, but I got most of the way through it. Yeah, so he hadn't even finished it, and the very famous William Castle, who most people know, he made like a lot of like really cheesy movies in the 50s where he did all those gimmicks, you know what I mean? Like the thing where he would put the buzzers in the seats for the Tingler and the Emerjo thing with the skeleton that comes out during, I think it was House on Haunted Hill or whatever it was. So that guy actually bought the rights to Ira Levin's novel, Rosemary's Baby, and wanted to make it into a movie, you know, before it was even published. However, like when they got the producers and the company, everything were like, yeah, we want to make this movie, but we don't really want William Castle to direct it because of his reputation as kind of like, you know, for making like B pictures, really. So they offered a couple movies to Roman Polanski because he had done, he wasn't like kind of a mainstream director at this point. He had done Knife in the Water, I think, and he had done Repulsion. So he was still very much like an art house director, but they thought that he could, you know, go on to much greater things, like more mainstream success. So they actually, he was like really excited about this movie. Now, what he wanted to do, though, and the book is like this as well, is that yes, it's about a satanic cult, and in some ways, it, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of over the top, you know, the concept of it, but in execution, it comes across as completely realistic and completely believable.
This movie started the Satanic Panic, if you ask me.
Well, it was for sure. It was for sure responsible for like a lot of these satanic movies that came out.
Yeah.
In later years, because I mean, this came out in 1968, and it was kind of like the big, you know, satanic movie, and it kind of kicked off this whole big panic. And Ira Levin, the guy that wrote the book, he has actually said that too. That he said, you know, I kind of blame this book and the movie for like kickstarting that whole everyone's afraid of Satan all of a sudden. He's like, you know, when we thought that that was kind of like Satanism and like people worried about Satanism was going away. You know what I mean? And he's like, and I kind of feel bad that I kind of had a part in bringing that back out. You know
what I people mean? Actually thought this was going on. I remember I was growing up, you know, watching Geraldo Rivera and all the those damn daytime talk show shit that you could watch, you know, during the summer vacation. And, you know, they were awesome because they would cover paranormal topics and stuff. You know, they knew how to entertain a daytime
crowd.
They
were. It's like they were complete bullshit, but it was entertaining bullshit.
Yeah, but they would have people on there saying they came out of satanic breeding programs that, you know, girls are saying, yeah, I was in a breeder program. I gave birth to 100 babies and they killed them all. You know, it was so fucking over the top and bizarre that me as a kid might started to think, well, maybe something like that might be real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially after, you know, Math Mountain Poltergeist shit that happened to me, I was thinking maybe they are doing that. But FBI was coming out going, no, there's no evidence for any of this. These people are full of shit. basically.
Yeah, and like the thing is, it's like, and we talked about this a little long time ago, like on our second show, the Satanic
Panic. There were weird cults.
Yeah, there's like weird cults every now and then, but it's this big widespread thing, and like they're killing all these babies, and people are keeping it secret. Yeah. There's just no way that anybody can.
And cops and politicians involved up to the very top, you know. Pedophile rings, maybe, but satanic cults, no. Maybe a pedophile ring that kind of called itself some of, you know, there was some weird shit that went in, what was going on in churches. Like, you know, it was, shit was documented. Like, remember that Catholic school filled with those Catholic schoolgirls where the priests were pimping out the girls?
Yeah. I mean, that was,
to the cops?
Yeah.
That really happened.
Yeah, that did.
But
The Keepers is what we're talking about. It was on Netflix.
It was on Netflix, but that's not the same as a satanic cult fucking breeding kids and weird shit was going on, but not exactly as told in these stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, it seems like Rosemary's Baby, when it was published, because it was published in 1967, and then the movie was made in 1968, because like I said, the rights of it were purchased before it was even published. You know what I mean? So I feel like this did kind of kick off the whole thing. You know, later on, they had Blood on Satan's Claw, they had The Exorcist, the Omen later on, like all these kind of satanic movies that came out in the 70s. But like I said, the thing about this and the thing that makes it work and what makes it scarier to me, I mean, one, I've always been I'm not a fan of Roman Polanski as a person, because obviously he kind of sucks. But as a filmmaker, I mean, I love his shit, particularly his early stuff. And he was just really, really good at putting across this atmosphere of just like dread and paranoia and this kind of like ambiguity where it's like, you know, and particularly in Rosemary's Baby, and, you know, we talked about it a little bit when we were talking about The Tenant too, where you're not really entirely sure, because Rosemary's Baby is pretty much, it's entirely from Rosemary's point of view. So you only know what Rosemary knows. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know about, like, the machinations, like, going on behind the scenes or anything like that. So it's almost kind of like you're with her, you sympathize with her, you empathize with her, you want her to be right, but then there's, like, a little thing in the back of your mind going, she does kind of sound crazy, though, a little bit, in a little way.
Yeah, they're gaslighting the shit out of this girl.
Oh, my God, and this is, like, every time I watch this movie, because Netflix just added it, like, not too long ago, and that's what I was like, oh, finally, like, you know, I've been wanting to do this for a really long time. And every time I see this movie, and I have to say, this is actually one of the most faithful book-to-movie adaptations I've ever seen. Roman Polanski adapted the novel, and he had never adapted someone else's work before, so he didn't know that you could, like, change shit.
Yeah.
So he pretty much made it exactly the same. So if you read the book, there's, like, in whole scenes, whole chunks of dialogue are, like, exactly like the movie. Yeah. It was just some stuff that was taken out because of, for length, I would imagine.
Anton LaVey claims to be in this movie.
He might be.
he claimed to play the devil. That he was in the devil costume.
Yeah.
That got Rosemary.
I wonder if he just said that, or if he just said that so he'd be like.
I don't think it's
kind of like the guy in the Eddie Murphy movie. Said, I worked with Roman Polanski, even though when we watched Rosemary's Baby, I said, "That's the guy. That's him. He's the elevator. He's the elevator operator." Yeah.
I think it's been confirmed that Anton LaVey did some consulted, maybe.
I'm not sure if he consulted on Rosemary's Baby. He did consult on
the car. He did. Remember?
No, Devil's Reign.
Devil's Reign.
The Devil's Reign. He was in The Devil's Reign.
I think he also consulted for the car.
He might have. Yeah.
I think it said so in the credits.
Yeah, but he did Devil's Reign with William Shatner, and I see he played like he had like a cameo at Anton. The end or something like that. They didn't show him like up.
We did a show on Anton. Anton, he was funny. He's full of shit.
aren't they all? Yeah. But yeah, so the one thing and the thing that scares me the most about this movie is that. You know, poor little Rosemary, who all she wants is she wants this really nice apartment. You know, she's a homemaker and everything like that. Her horrible husband, Guy, is an aspiring actor. And he's been in some commercials and shit like that. But he's not, you know, super famous or anything like that. But he wants, like, a big break, and he keeps looking for a big break. But, you know, she's like, oh, she wants to start a family. And she wants, and in a way, they go into this a little bit more in the book, but it's kind of like addressed in the movie. She is a small town girl. She's from Omaha, Nebraska. She comes from a very large Catholic family. And she says that she's agnostic now and stuff like that. But you can tell that not really, that there's a lot of that Catholic kind of shit going on still back there. So that kind of plays into the whole story too, because here's this small town girl who's living in New York City, you know, in with all these theater people and stuff like that. She's trying to be very sophisticated and stuff, but she's really like kind of a farm girl at heart. And she kind of wants to, I mean, she wants like the family values dream, you know what I mean? She just wants like a pretty house. She wants the babies. She wants all that kind of stuff. And in a way, like the satanic cult headed by their wacky old neighbors, Roman and Minnie Castevet, are kind of like almost like exploiting that and subverting her desires, you know what I mean, for that. Yeah. And so in a way, like Rosemary is obviously, and if you've seen the movie, like Rosemary's not their first choice to birth the son of Satan. They actually were grooming one girl named Terry who'd been staying with them. She was like a drug addict and they fished her out of the gutter and like got her off heroin and all this other stuff. And she talks to Rosemary very briefly in the laundry room, and she's talks about how wonderful they are and stuff like that. But then like a scene or two later, you know, she jumps out the fucking window of the, like the seventh floor. I think they live on the seventh floor, and kills herself. And so at that point, the cult starts grooming Rosemary. Now, like I said, the great thing about this movie and the one thing that scares me and infuriates me in equal measure is that it's bad enough that these fucking old people next door who they're bullying, but in a way that and this to me like is what makes it more insidious. Because they're clearly bullying her and they're clearly manipulating her, but they're doing it in a way that comes across as like, oh, they're just being friendly and helpful and stuff like that, but like overly so. Yeah. So it's like you feel bad telling them to fuck off because they seem like they're being nice. It's like, oh, can I do anything for you?
They're playing mind games.
Right. And they're like bringing her stuff and it's like, and she feels bad like not allowing them. But because she is kind of like a submissive personality, like I said, maybe from her Catholic upbringing or small town upbringing or whatever. So they kind of just use this niceness to like infiltrate her. I mean, they'll just like come over, like Minnie comes over with her friend and they're knitting and they just like, oh, you don't mind that we're here. And they just come in and like sit down on her couch and start knitting and shit like that. It's like they just start invading like every little aspect of her life.
Yeah. Anton LaVey would have called that like lesser satanic magic.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they do.
Robert L. Shook would just call it high pressure sales techniques. That's what you use.
That's what they're doing.
Where you use a person's friendly nature and their good manners against them.
Yeah.
By having conversations to filter them and channel them down to the end result of buying something from you, and they don't realize that you're doing it. And in the end, you think it's your idea to buy this thing.
Yeah, and that is essentially
same
what
thing
they,
cults do.
Yeah,
same thing
and that is essentially what they are doing to her. It's like they're almost like love bombing her.
Right. Oh, and this happens in the media, the news media, and politics, so they're doing it to you, too. There's been whole fucking books written on propaganda and mass psychology and manipulating fucking masses. So, you know, don't think, oh, that'll never happen to me. No, they're trying to do it all the time to you.
Well, and like I said, that's, you know, it's bad.
That's the corporations.
You know, it's bad enough that that, you know, this cult is, like, manipulating her into essentially, like, giving birth to Satan's child. But the shitty thing is that her husband, and she doesn't know this for quite a long time, but her husband essentially sells out her body, I mean, is what he does.
Yeah.
And he does that very early on in the film, because apparently they promise him, oh, you'll get these big breaks and stuff. And I don't think he believes them at first, but then a big part that he's up for that went for to somebody else, then suddenly that guy goes blind and tries to kill himself. And he's, like, in a mental hospital or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he gets the part. And he even says in the movie, hell of a way to get it.
Yeah.
He says that in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's then he realizes, he's like, oh, they're legit. So, sure.
Yeah, and it's not really clear if they did that with some kind of supernatural power. I don't think they were. I think they were poisoning people and using, you know, technology.
Well.
And fucking not technology, but tactics, social tactics, like gangster tactics. To get this done.
I'm not sure about
that,
though.
There is some supernatural shit that does happen at the end. What do you think?
See, I kind of think, well, in a way, like I said, Roman Polanski wanted this. He's like, yes, it's about a satanic cult. Yes, it's supernatural. But he's like, I wanted to make it completely realistic. So he's like, I didn't want you to see anything. Yes, there is a dream sequence where she is impregnated by Satan. But it's a dream sequence. Like, even though you know, you suspect that it's happening in real life, and she suspects that it's happening in real life because she's been drugged, but only partially. You could write that off as like saying, oh, well, she just dreamed that. She just hallucinated it. There's nothing else supernatural. But everything is ambiguous because, like I said, that guy goes blind. When Rosemary's friend Hutch tries to warn her about the cult and about like Roman Castevet, how his name's an anagram and all this other kind of stuff, Hutch suddenly goes into a coma after they took something of his, a glove. So I think they're doing voodoo shit on people.
Okay.
And honestly, this didn't even occur to me until I was rereading the book again this morning. But at the very beginning, when they're first looking at the apartment in the Bramford, which was actually the Dakota, at least the outside was, where John Lennon got shot in 1980. When they're first looking at the apartment, the guy that's showing the apartment says, oh, Mrs. Gardenia, the woman that used to live there, she was also in a coma and she had died. And there was an implication, and I don't remember how much of this they went into in the movie, but there was an implication that she had had a falling out with Minnie Castevet and was maybe about to like narc on him or do some other kind of shit. And they put her in a coma too.
Yeah.
So I think that they are doing supernatural shit.
I was under the impression that it was kind of like what would happen in real voodoo, like Haitian voodoo, where it was a mixture of like mind games, drugs, and poisons. That's what I thought
it might be, because Minnie did have like an herb garden.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she was giving Rosemary like a shake, like after she gets pregnant, you know, that's supposed to have like vitamins and.
I thought it was drugs and poisons that they were. Which would kind of go to the voodoo witchcraft type. You know what I mean? A lot of stuff in, you know, old-fashioned witchcraft, you could probably kind of like break it down to, you know, making drugs out of roots and stuff, you know what I mean? That's what I thought it was.
It may be, but like I said, they kind
of... You dress it up with rituals and mind games and kind of like gangster tactics and cult tactics, you know? That's what I thought was going on. But there, without a doubt, towards the end, she did give birth to a supernatural
child. There was something wrong with
the baby. Definitely wrong
with it. Had devil eyes.
So...
Although they never show it.
They never show it.
And I love that.
Was it an effect of some kind of drug that they were giving her while she was poisoned? I don't know. But maybe it was the devil. The whole thing is written so it's like plausible deniability.
Yeah.
Where it could be either.
Which to me, like I said...
That's a better way to do it.
It makes it scarier because one, you're not really sure if she's losing her marbles or not. And the other scary thing is that after Hutch goes into a coma... I mean, Hutch was the only person who was actually looking out for her and was actually, you know, on her side.
I thought
no one else could be trusted. No one.
I thought they just poisoned him. But maybe it was supernatural, and you're not really supposed to know.
Yeah, I don't think they, like, called it one way or the other.
No.
I don't think the book does either.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just like, he went into a coma this morning. They don't know what's wrong with him. So
it's a good flick. It's a classic. It inspired a lot of other movies. I mean, you know what I mean? In this genre, it actually created the genre. I don't think you'd have had movies like some of the other horror movies that came out after it. Like, what am I thinking of? Amityville Horror, and I don't think you would have had Exorcist and shit come out without this movie.
Well, like I said, I think this really did kick that off.
It,
and like I said, Ira Levin has even like said that, like in interviews.
Yeah.
He's passed away now, but
because it's an over the top topic, and back in the 60s, you wouldn't think. I don't think they thought a movie like this would sell. And then when this came out, and they went, "Oh man, you know, people actually really like that. Let's do that again."
Yeah.
So then you started to see a bunch of satanic/Christian themed horror movies start coming out one after the other.
Yeah.
And people liked it. But it caused that satanic panic, I believe.
Yeah, and like I said, Ira Levin seemed to agree with you on that. He held himself partly responsible.
It was, you know, for you youngsters out there, there was no internet. So getting information was hard back in those days. You could only get it from television. And television would kind of support the fact that there were satanic cults running around, so people believed it.
Yeah.
You know? Geraldo said that they were there.
And you know, everyone Sally Jesse Raphael. Geraldo
Sally Jesse Raphael said that satanic cults were real. And the news, I think, was kind of saying that satanic cults are real because you'd have serial killers and they'd show pictures of pentagrams during the news.
Yeah.
And all the church people were saying it was real. So people thought it was real.
Well, I think a lot of that happened. And actually, you know, the book and movie of Rosemary's Baby goes into this, too. It's very much like a backdrop of, against which the story is set. You know, they're kind of playing with the fact that, you know, in the 1960s, traditional religion was in the decline. And, you know, there were all these alternative belief systems. Everyone was getting into, like, New Age type of stuff. Yeah. And I think, like, for more traditional religious people, that was very scary for them. And so, you know, there's like, kind of a backdrop of that going on with Rosemary's Baby, too. Because not only her character, I mean, even, and they mentioned this in the movie as well. There's, like, you know, the Pope is visiting New York City. And she goes a lot into her, like, Catholic background and how there's still some of it left over, even though she says she's agnostic. And, you know, and so it's kind of playing with that. And it's also kind of playing with the whole, you know, women's liberation movement. And so it's almost kind of like a thing where it's a clash between, like, traditional and, like, you know, newer, you know, ideas that were coming out at the time.
Yeah, people were wondering how extreme could it get?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where this, all the satanic shit started popping up.
So I think that's kind of what makes it a richer experience, because it can be read, like, in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of subtext. But like I said, you don't have to take it like that. You can just take it as, like, kind of a creepy, like, psychological drama with some supernatural elements that aren't super over the top. But there's all kind of stuff, like, going on under the surface. And like I said, probably, and the way I usually take it, too, is that, you know, as I said, I find it so scary because it seemed so easy for Rosemary to get sucked into this thing where she's just constantly being taken advantage of. Every single thing she wants to do is shot down. Yeah. You know, everyone is just forcing their will upon her, and she has lost all control of her life and of her body.
Yeah.
You know, it's being used against her will, and she feels like she can't do anything about it because she doesn't have anyone to help her. She doesn't have anyone to turn to.
This movie reminds me a lot of The Stepford Wives for some reason.
Well, it's the same writer. Ira Levin wrote that novel, too. All right.
See, I called it. I have the ability to do that, to somehow, without even knowing who these fuckers are, I can recognize I can recognize their work. It has a similar tone, similar themes.
It's almost satirical.
Yeah.
I think Stepford Wives more than Rosemary's Baby, but Rosemary's Baby has almost a little bit of a black comedy vibe to it. Yeah. Also, in the book and for sure in the movie. And, I mean, particularly the way they cast Ruth Gordon, who actually won an Oscar for playing Minnie Castevet. She is so fucking great in this, because she's like, you can see how you could get sucked into that, because she is very nice and very helpful, but she's also really nosy and she's really forthright. She's always coming over when she's not really wanted, like, forcing her way in, but in a way that you feel bad telling her to piss off, or you know, like, you don't want her around, because then she'll make you feel all guilty about it and shit like that.
Yeah.
So you can see how, you know, just inch by inch, how Rosemary's, you know, her control over her life is just being ebbed away, like, very, very slowly. And by the end, she almost thinks she's losing her mind. And then it's like the sad thing, and this, like, freaks me out really bad, too, is, like, she goes to, you know, finally she puts her foot down, because her pregnancy has been really difficult. She's losing weight. She looks terrible. She looks ill. You know, she has constant pain. And she keeps, you know, complaining about saying something's wrong. Something's wrong. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. It'll go away and all this other kind of shit. So finally, she puts her foot down. She invites her friends over. They tell her, go to another doctor because, you know, but they've been through it. So they know that there's something wrong. So they tell her, go get a second opinion. This doctor you're seeing now, who was set up by Minnie M. Roman, you know, is not doing you right. So she goes back to her initial doctor, who she chose, and Minnie and Caspet kind of wrested away from her. And she goes back to him and tells him the whole thing about, oh, you know, I think they're a satanic cult. She thinks they're going to sacrifice the baby. She doesn't understand that they're going to, you know, that it's going to be Satan's baby. She thinks they're just going to kill it.
Yeah, they're bringing
in
the Antichrist.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, that doesn't occur to her. She just assumes they're going to sacrifice it. So she goes to this doctor, and this doctor, her first obstetrician, is not in the cult. But she goes and tells him all this, and he pretends to believe her, and then fucking narcs on her. He calls the husband and the other doctor, and they come and get her.
So she's crazy.
Yeah, so it's like she literally has nobody she can trust. And that is like what's really, really scary to me.
Yeah.
But another thing that I find really interesting, though, is I really like the way they ended it. Because she has the baby. They try to tell her the baby's dead, but she's like, she doesn't buy it because she hears a baby crying. And there's a thing where, you know, they're pumping out her milk or whatever. And they're like, oh, well, don't put the spoon in it. That's messy. And she's like, well, what difference does it make if you're just throwing it away? Because they told her they just throw it away. So she eventually goes over there and finds the baby and sees it and then freaks out in the very famous scene where she sees its eyes and everything like that. But then at the very end of it, she almost, she decides that she's going to mother this baby. You know what I mean? So it's almost kind of like her motherly instinct, like, overrode, like, her doubt about this whole thing. I mean, this is Satan's baby. This is a Satan baby. She sees it right in front of her. And yet, that maternal instinct is so strong, her Catholic upbringing is so strong, that she thinks, well, it's still my baby, and so I'm going to take care of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? She doesn't say that, but you can just see it in her face. Anyway. You can just see it in her face.
That's probably what would happen.
Now, I should say that in, I believe it was mid-70s, maybe 1976, they actually made a TV movie sequel to this called, I think it's called Whatever Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, I remember it.
It's on YouTube for free. It's not very good.
Yeah.
Patty Duke plays Rosemary. She was actually supposed to play Rosemary in the original movie, but then didn't.
I remember the ads for it as a kid.
Yeah.
That it was coming on. Yeah.
I just remember it being not very good.
Yeah, I never saw it, I don't think.
Now, interestingly, in the 1990s, Ira Levin wrote a novel sequel called Son of Rosemary. And it was actually the last book he wrote. I believe he died of a heart attack not too long after it was published. And don't get me wrong, I love Ira Levin, okay? I've read most of his books. He's a great, fantastic writer. Son of Rosemary made me so angry that when I finished it, I threw it against the wall. And I have never done that before.
That's how dumb it was?
The ending made me really, really angry. Yeah. Just the ending made me really angry.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what the ending was.
The ending probably retroactively spoils everything that he's done, right? Including this movie, right? Then it was all, she woke up and it was all just a dream.
It wasn't quite that, but well, almost. It's
like okay.
But almost.
Yeah, all right.
I can see how it could be kind of divided. Like, you might think, oh, cool. You know what I mean? At the ending. I can see how you would think it was cool, but for me, it just made me angry.
Okay.
But, yeah. So, a couple other things I wanted to say about kind of the production of Rosemary's Baby. Like I said, interestingly, Roman Polanski was actually going to put Sharon Tate in the movie, or perhaps Tuesday Weld, I think was what he wanted too, because he actually pictured Rosemary when he was writing the adaptation as like kind of a bigger, like a full figured, like a farm girl type of, you know, like, you know what I mean? Not like a little waifish woman. But the thing is, when he kind of went to the producers about it, they said, well, you know, you're kind of an art house director. This is going to be your first mainstream movie. And the book hadn't been published yet, so it wasn't like a big bestseller, even though Ira Levin was kind of a known name because he'd published a few other books before that. So they were like, we kind of want a slightly bigger star, like a little bit more, you know, star power, just to make sure that the movie sells. So they actually got Mia Farrow to do it, even though she was not super famous at the time. She had only had a couple of, like, she'd been, like, in a couple of supporting roles in films. She was kind of famous because she was on Peyton Place on TV. And also, she had just married Frank Sinatra. Now, interestingly and very famously, Frank Sinatra, when he married Mia Farrow, he did not want her to have a film career or an acting career because he was that kind of guy, I guess. So when she took the lead in Rosemary's Baby, he was very upset and very famously served her with divorce papers right in the middle of her filming a scene.
He didn't want to be married to an actress.
I guess not. Well, yeah. I don't think he wanted her to work, period.
Yeah, that's the way it was back then.
Yeah.
So, well, also, you know, what was going on in Hollywood back then? You know, all the casting couches and shit like that, you know, so he, come on.
But she,
A lot of time, actors and actresses, you know, the way they land those jobs. Ask Harvey Weinstein. That's probably why. Now go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. But so anyway, she tried to kind of patch up their relationship by saying, oh, well, I'll quit the movie. But at this point, they had already filmed like half of the movie. And, you know, they were kind of like, look, they showed her a rough cut of the movie and they said, look, you're so good in it. You're going to get an Oscar. It's like, you know, please stay with it. So she did decide to stay with it in the end. And Frank Sinatra divorced her. Sadly, she did not win an Oscar. She didn't even get nominated. Although, like I said, Ruth Gordon got nominated for Best Supporting Actress and won. This also was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, which I don't believe that it won. But as I said, now I do feel like I've seen like a lot of younger people review this movie, and a lot of them really seem very positive about it, which that makes me happy because. Sometimes I feel like movies that came out in the 60s or 70s, you know, if you didn't live through that time period, if you don't have a lot of knowledge about it, like sometimes you'd be like, well, what's scary about that? Or, you know, I can see how if there's like a cultural difference or like an age difference, then maybe you can't understand like why something is scary. You know what I mean?
They don't understand the context of the time.
Right. And I'm saying, too, that I particularly because Rosemary's character, I mean, I don't find her particularly... I mean, yes, she's submissive, maybe more than a woman in a horror movie would be nowadays. But I guess the same complaints were made about, you know, Shelley Duvall and The Shining and stuff. It's like, oh, why didn't she just, like, bash him on the head with a bat and get the fuck out of there?
That wasn't the book.
But that wasn't, yeah. And the thing about it, too, is that, you know, there have been submissive people throughout, you know, that's just, like, people's personality.
You got people
types.
Like that today.
There's people like that today. So it's like, I did not find her particularly, like, annoyingly... submissive or anything like that. And another thing too is that you have to think, if you really thought like your next door neighbors were Satanists, I mean, if I thought, like, I would think I was crazy. Like, if I must be imagining
in
it.
The book, she was surrounded by a bunch of people that were much older than her, you know. They were kind of just funneling her down into a, you know what I mean,
and they seemed to know better.
They knew exactly how to do it, so it, you know,
like I said,
another thing is that we're talking about the context of the time. I think a good example, look at what they're doing with like the Predator series. They're constantly trying to reboot the Predator over and over again, hoping to get that same thing from Predator 1. It'll never happen. All right? Never happen because everybody knows what the Predator looks like.
Yeah, and that was kind of like the best thing about that
movie.
That
was what the Predator
was. Didn't really see
when
it.
That mask on that Predator came off, all right, for the first time. And you're sitting in that audience at fucking 17 or 18 years old and see that face. It looks real. You just bought it. 100%. You're like, that's an alien.
Plus the makeup alien. And shit
it
was fucking amazing.
It looked amazing.
It still looks amazing.
And it was filmed in, you know, kind of like older fashioned, kind of grainy film. So it wasn't real HD. You couldn't see any flaws in the costume at all. It looked like a real creature to us back then. And that's what made that movie. It's... After that reveal, you could never really recreate that again. So, and it's of the context of the time. So you can't come out with a new Predator movie and have anybody really be impressed with it.
Well,
because
yeah.
Everybody's been seeing that shit. Same thing with Star Wars. You try to bring Star Wars back, that's just another sci-fi show. Everything looks like that. Back in the day that Star Wars, the first Star Wars came out, no one had seen anything like that.
Yeah.
So it had a huge impact.
So
you show that to a kid today and they're just like, so?
Yeah.
You know?
So I do feel like, and I kind of say this with a lot of horror movies, because I like horror movies from like from every era. I even like silent movies, like, you know, from the early 1900s. As long as you come at it with some idea of like the time, you know what I mean? I think Rosemary's Baby still holds up very well today, just as kind of a study in, because it's not like over the top paranoia or anything like that, even though yes, she has a very submissive character, yes, you know, she is able to be, you know, manipulated by people around her, but I don't think that that's really all that far-fetched, or I don't think it's all that different than what might happen to someone today in that same situation. So I think this is actually aged fairly well. I mean, you know what I mean, other than it being 1968 and the clothes and the hair and everything like that.
Yeah, you got to remember that in 1968, the idea of a satanic cult trying to breed women and to make the... That was a new concept. That was a new and terrifying concept. It's not quite as scary as today.
Yeah, and it's because we've seen it so many times,
right.
too. In part because of this movie, because it was so successful.
Vampires are not scary. They were scary in the 1800s. That was a novel concept. Although that new Dracula Untold movie was quite cool.
Yeah.
Still not scary.
Yeah.
And, you know,
well, I think it takes a lot to scare people now. I mean, you're always going to be able to make something scary because, you know, whatever the context of the time is, there's always some fear that people have that you can exploit, like in your horror movies and stuff like that.
You got to go as far as like making human centipedes and shit like that. That's how far you
go. And even that wasn't scary though. That was just disgusting.
It freaked me out though. Disgusting. Well, imagine if you got caught up in that.
Yeah.
And they did that to you.
I'm not scared of that. Yeah, I'm just grossed out.
It's kind
of
like body horror though and weird shit like that. You know?
Yeah.
And you know, it's just weird.
But I mean, like I said, I think the thing that still scares me about Rosemary's Baby nowadays is just the idea that she's alone. Like everyone she thought she could trust turned on her, essentially. You know, and they're just trying to use her for their own, without really seeming like that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like this trap, like, just closing tighter and tighter and tighter, and she doesn't have anybody to turn to. And the one guy that she does turn to that's not in the cult, he doesn't believe her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then he, like, just throws her right back to them. So, to me, that's what makes this really scary. And like I said, it seems like Roman Polanski was really good, particularly with his Apartment trilogy, which was Repulsion and The Tenant and this one, of just kind of having this ambiguous, creepy, you know, this thing of, like, either madness or, like, other people, like, closing in on you and just, like, taking all of your agency away. And I think that that's, like, a really scary concept still. And I still find this a pretty scary movie and a very infuriating movie because, like, especially her husband. God damn it.
Yeah.
That guy is such a shitheel. And I was like, when we were watching it again, I'm like, look at this fucking, It's like, he'd been like 5 minutes after they move into the fucking apartment building, he's over there at the old neighbor's and they're like, hey, want your wife to birth Satan's baby? He's like, for a film role? Sure. Just have at it. Rape her while she's sleeping. Why not? You know what I mean? It's like, it's just, what a shithead. Yeah, but that, like, scared the crap out of me. But yeah, so, for real, if you haven't seen Rosemary's Baby, again, what the hell is the matter with you? It's a classic of cinema, and you should definitely check it out. The book is also very good, although, like I said, the movie and the book are very similar. I'm not saying that you shouldn't read the book if you've seen the movie, because obviously you should always read the book, but, because the book goes into, like, a few more things, and, like, into, like, Rosemary's, like, internal monologue and stuff like that, and has, like, a couple other subplots that were left out of the movie, but other than that, you know, pretty similar. So if you like the book, like the movie, you should probably like the book as well. So that will do it for our breakdown of Rosemary's Baby, and we will see you next time. Bye.